The following presentation was recorded at the Buddhist Society of Victoria, Malvern East, Australia. Please visit our website at bsv.net.au.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, Ajahn. Thank you for joining us tonight. I'm not a disembodied voice. I'm actually just sitting over here in the corner. Well, a warm welcome to everyone in the hall here tonight. If you are new to the BSV and this is your first time, a very warm welcome. If you'd like to know more about our meditation programs or anything, please visit the website or feel free to come up and ask Ajahn after the session or myself in the volunteer vest. Welcome also to the online audience as well who have joined us. Without further ado, I'll pass on to Ajahn to start the guided meditation for this evening. Thank you, Ajahn.
Thanks, Langdon. Again, resonating Langdon's warm welcome to everybody that's here. Is it anybody that it is their first night here? And yeah, first night here. Have you, either of you done meditation before or? Yeah, done some before? You're sort of, eh? Right, okay. No problem. But you have done a little bit before there, yeah, no problem. Perfect. So just for the benefit of the new people that are here tonight, it is a bit longer meditation session. We usually sit for about 45 minutes or about an hour. I'll give some guidance throughout that. If you already have a particular kind of meditation style, and this goes for everybody else in the room, if you have your own particular style, you want to do it, you don't have to follow along with my guidance. It's just there for anybody that is reasonably newer to the practice. So as I said, we sit for about 45 minutes, an hour. And then after that, if you have any questions, we open it up for people to ask questions after that. So that's about the long and short of it. So with that, we'll get started. You can take a comfortable seat. And we can just start to settle into our chair. Start to feel the body relax and make its small adjustments. Just take note of how it feels simply sitting here, either in the hall or sitting at home. Overall, what it feels like for your body to be sitting here in space. You can notice any sounds that are around you. Sound of my voice, sounds from inside or outside. And we can even notice generally how we feel in this moment. Maybe you only just arrived, you're feeling still a little bit restless. Or your mind is nice and ready for the next hour or so. And just simply take stock of how you feel in this moment. The things you hear. And the feeling of the body starting to settle in and make its minor adjustments. Usually before we sit down to do anything for a period of time, like read a book or do some work, we make a conscious decision to sit and do the task. And it can be the same with your meditation. In your mind, you can set this intention. Spend the next hour or so relaxing and trying to notice the quality of your mind. In some way, reining your thoughts in and letting some things go. Just see if you can make that intention to sit as still as possible for the next hour. And whatever comes up, that you'll put aside any thoughts about the future, any thoughts about the past, that you'll just leave those be for the next hour or so. And as things start to settle down and become more at ease, you can start to let our mindfulness or our awareness come to rest on one object. Might be the breath. It might be a mantra that you repeat over in your mind. Or focusing your attention on a particular part of the body. Or just on awareness itself. Whatever meditation object you usually find most comforting and effective, just see if you can stay with this object for the next few minutes. We can watch our breath coming and going if we still don't have a usual object of meditation. Feeling the air coming in and going either at the tip of the nose or in the chest or in the abdomen. Simply observing this process. if you notice that your mind wanders off, your mindfulness slips away, you get lost in thought, this is okay. It's nothing to be concerned about. Just whenever you do notice that you become distracted, just simply come back and start again. Bring your awareness back to your meditation object, like the breath or a mantra. It's very normal, very natural. Just simply do this over and over again. The idea is to just not let it roam too far away. Sort of like confining a pet to a backyard. You don't want to let it go over the fence, but you also don't want to constrict it and push it down and make it stay in one place. You can allow it some room to move around a little bit, but just as long as it stays in the backyard. Likewise, with our meditation, our awareness can be a little more broad. There can be some movement there, but just as long as we don't allow it to go too far away. Or that we don't try to force it to stay still in one spot. Simply try to keep your attention fenced in the yard of mindfulness.
as your awareness becomes more attuned with your meditation object, it sinks and locks in to the object with greater harmony. You might notice the mind becoming stiller, more tranquil and more at ease. More unified and at rest in one spot. You do notice this happening. Just allow this process to unfold naturally. Allow the stillness to permeate. And from this point of stillness, we can notice the comings and goings of the mind. Maybe the thoughts that drift in and drift out. The feelings in the body, or there's some sounds. From this place of stillness, see if you can watch some of these things just drift in and drift out. Just like clouds drifting through the sky. They change pattern, they move. They float across the horizon and then change and dissipate and disappear. See if you can notice these aspects of your experience do the same. These thoughts, how they join together, roll on from each other, but change and gradually disappear. The sounds that arise and pass away. Again, just like the clouds drifting through the wide open sky. If you can notice this from this place of stillness, just like you are lying in one spot on the ground and looking up into the sky, the vast open sky, without any other objects obstructing your vision. You just simply lay there in stillness, looking up at the sky, noticing the clouds drift through. See if you can do this your awareness allowed to be still in one spot and allow things to drift through. In the last few minutes of the meditation now, just see if you can shift the focus of your awareness to that place in your body where you typically feel those kind of warm feelings of kindness. Say if you think about a parent or a child, that spot within your body that care and feeling of kindness seems to spring forth from. For many people this might be different, but for a lot of people they find that their area in their heart is where they usually feel these things. Wherever it is for you, just see if you can let your awareness settle on that spot for a few moments. Just notice what this area feels like. There might even be some associated in internal visual images popping up, like a feeling or an image of a warm glow in that area. And with your awareness focused on this spot in your body, see if you can bring to mind somebody in your life that's helped you in some small way. Could be a parent, could be a friend, could be a teacher. Could even be a total stranger. Could even be somebody that maybe that you don't even know, like a doctor that maybe operated on you at one point. Somebody that's helped you in some way and assisted you. Bring this person to mind, or it can even be an animal or a pet that's always there for you. And as you hold the image of this person in your mind, see if deep within your heart you can thank them. Recognizing that some way this person has made your life better, has made your existence a little more easier or happier. Notice that somehow your life is better because of this person, because of this connection. And that warm feeling of kindness maybe in your chest. See if you can sink into that and allow it to expand and grow. Might be a feeling of gratitude. Or it might be a feeling of care or kindness. Whatever that feeling is, just see if you can sink into it as you recall this individual that helped you in some way, this individual that you're connected to. And allow that to continually grow and expand within your heart. And again, you can, from deep within your heart, you can say thank you to this person and thank them for helping you. And thank them for making your life better. And we can also make the intention that if at some point, at any time, they need our help, we'll try to repay this debt of gratitude that we have. We'll show them the same care and kindness that they show to us. Make that intention to some way pay this kindness forward. And as you breathe in and out, again, see if you can allow this feeling of kindness or care or gratitude to expand throughout your body with each in-breath. Fill every area of your body as the breath comes in. And as you breathe out, you can breathe out this feeling of kindness or gratitude. And allow it to spread outwards and around. And breathing in, allowing it to fill your body. And breathing out, allowing it to spread all around you. Okay. Hopefully you had a nice, peaceful sit. If anybody needs to go, you can go. It's fine. It's no problem. But if you do have any questions, you're more than welcome to ask any questions now.
If you do have a question, you can just raise your hand and I'll pass the microphone to you. We do have an online question.
Yeah, for sure.
Ajahn?
For sure.
Justin, first of all, in response to Kaido from Germany, thank you for pointing out that the Monday talk was apparently advertised to take place on Zoom. We'll check that and follow up and make sure that's corrected. In fact, these sessions only happen over YouTube. Mm. The next question is, dear Bhante, no matter how calm I can make the mind and body, the attachment to the body just will not let go. I believe it is a fear of death, and when not in meditation, I'm hyper aware of my body. There's no actual question attached to that, but perhaps just, you know, what to do about this.
Yeah. So... first off, it's very good that you can make your mind very calm in that way. This is a really fundamental step that you need to actually go through. And this, there's something about the quality of actually doing that anyway that is allowing you to see that in some way that you are still quite attached to your body. And looking at that from that point of stillness, you can see that there is this fear of the body
essentially going through changes, continually changing to the point where the body won't exist anymore, and this feeling that is you won't exist anymore. And so this is a good thing to actually notice. Most people go through a lot of their lives and don't ever notice that. They don't realize that that's, you know, the thing that is maybe driving them a lot and driving them to do different things in their life. So this is first and foremost a good thing that you're able to do this, and that you're able to recognize that this is something that is sort of sticky, sticking you in some kind of way. Now, this is an area where we start to think about meditation, and that it's not just this. If we're thinking about Buddhist meditation, and it's not just this aspect of making the mind calm in this way. Again, it's a very useful thing. It's a very it's something that you should develop. But there is also these other many different meditation techniques that we talk about, where you're actually trying to develop some wisdom, you're trying to use some kind of reflective contemplation into the nature of your own existence to see that it, you know, essentially that it is impermanent, that at some point, you know, you have to face up to this truth that you're going to have to die at some point, that you don't know when that is actually going to happen. You don't know how old you'll be when this happens. You don't know exactly what it's going to be like either. And this is something that we can reflect on. We can continue to reflect on in a very wise kind of way, that, you know, that this is an inevitable, it's an inevitability. It definitely will happen. It's not something that we can run away from. Nobody can get away from it. It's something that we're going to definitely have to face at some point. So this allows us to start to prepare for this, start to prepare for this aspect of in our lives that we don't know is what is actually going to happen. And, you know, you might sort of think that this is, you know, macabre in some kind of way, or it'll be depressing in some way to think about one's own mortality. But actually, if you do it from this point of stillness, and it sounds good, it sounds like you have that point, that foundation of stillness there, it actually becomes very freeing. It's not this thing where you're kind of looking at it and you're becoming more miserable because you're thinking about it. It actually becomes very free because you're facing up to this truth that is going to happen. You're facing up to this desire or this drive that we have that continues to allow us to, that continues to push us in different kinds of ways. So actually, if you do feel like it's the fear of death and the fear of the attachment to the body and the fear of the body going through, you know, aging and maybe sickness and then eventually passing away, I would, you know, recommend, if your mind feels strong enough, to reflect on that as much as possible. You can make the mind calm for a period of time. So say for you, you know, just hypothetically speaking, if you sat meditation for, let's call it half an hour, you can sit meditation and calm your mind for 20 minutes, but then the last 10 minutes, you can use that time to reflect and to contemplate on the nature of your body, that it is subject to old age, sickness, and death. So it's something, you know, we can do, it's another kind of practice we can do, and it is actually quite a powerful practice. So I recommend just trying it. The caveat to that, obviously, as well, is if you do reflect in this way and it is starting to make you miserable and it is starting to, you know, drag you down a kind of a dark path, you know, stop doing it. Just pull back from it. It's not like you have to go, I just need to continually go through this and make myself more and more miserable and more angry. And if it's going in the wrong way, pull back from it. Just as a bit of an anecdote, I used to do this practice. I still do, actually, sorry. But
what I mean is when I first started to do this practice, recollecting on my own mortality, I'd get really angry. I was always angry anyway, so it was it just made it worse. So I'd get angry and I'd get sort of, you know, cranky and snappy and all these kinds of things. So you have to balance it out with this kind of stillness and the joy and the happiness you get in the mind, plus the reflection on death. So just have to know how the mind's going. If it's going in the wrong way, just balance it out, or if it is really going in a bad way, just pull back from it. So yeah, hopefully that helps.
Thank you, Ajahn. Are there any questions here in the hall?
No,
at this point, we just have one more question,
yep.
Ajahn.
Yep.
Thank you for your beautiful meditation. Mm. It helped me, especially as I was emotional before the meditation.
Okay, good.
Any suggestions for the type of meditation that helps when emotionally challenged?
Yeah. It depends on the emotion.
So, sorry, Ajahn, to interrupt. The person just put a little part two to that.
Yep.
I have a lot of anxiety and fear.
Yep.
But did death meditation as a walking meditation,
yep,
using a mantra, it was amazing and freeing and accepting.
Mm.
So just in addition to the
cool
question about emotionally challenging.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so there's, in a way, sometimes there's two schools of thought with this. If there is a kind of high emotionality at that time, and especially something like anxiety or worry that you might be having beforehand, sometimes going into a meditation when you're in that hyper-emotional kind of state, maybe it's not the best thing to do. Maybe if you're really, really emotional, yeah, maybe go and do some walking, or in some sort of way kind of distract yourself physically so you can sort of settle down a little bit from the, if it's a really, really high anxiety, because the last thing you want to do if you're really, really anxious is close your eyes and put all your attention like right here. It's sometimes it's not a good thing to do. So a lot of times it's not a good thing to do. But so if you're really, really highly emotional, sort of change things up a bit, do something physical beforehand. But then when you do start to settle down to some extent, there's two schools of thought of how to potentially deal with these highly emotional states. The first is to, in some kind of way, just try to focus on one thing, on one object, so just the breath. So even if there are those kinds of worrying, anxious thoughts, there's just like, don't worry about it now, 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 just trying to focus on the breath. That works for some people, but it doesn't work for everybody. Sometimes it can make it worse. If you're finding that it makes it worse, then it's probably better to do some kind of practices where you are maybe using your thinking mind to some extent and sort of driving it and nudging it in a positive kind of way. The positive way there could be something like developing, like we did, developing gratitude for somebody that's helped us, developing that kind of kindness for others and kindness for others that you care for. So using the thinking mind in that way as a form of contemplation to sort of navigate the mind into a particular kind of direction to allow it to settle down a little bit more. And so usually, you said, if I'm understanding the question correctly, you said you sometimes you feel highly emotional and it's sort of anxious, and actually a death reflection helps with that. That actually can help with some people. It can be good for some people because it's like there's this kind of worry about, well, all these things that might happen in the future, but then a death reflection can really like squash that of like, well, I don't know what the future is going to be. I don't even know how much longer I'm going to be around. It can be good for some people, but it can also really go the wrong way. So if you find it useful, use it. If you don't find it useful,
pull back from it, definitely. But it's a lot of times it's everybody's so different that it's really hard to give a kind of concrete answer to these things. It's just something that you have to work with yourself and find the right kind of reflection or contemplation yourself that actually works. And yeah, just trying it out and seeing what works. But those, you know, three main ways that I talked about, if you are feeling very highly anxious, worried, emotional, sometimes it's not the best thing to jump straight in and do it. Go for a walk, do something. Or there's then when you do calm down a little bit, there's that way of like just doing this, focusing on the one thing, just, you know, a mantra or the breath or something like that. Just focusing on pushing everything else away and allowing the mind to settle down. If that works for you, good. If it doesn't, that's fine. This makes things worse. Then go to something where you're contemplating, where you're reflecting, you're trying to nudge the mind in a particular way, where you're developing those wholesome qualities like gratitude or connection or kindness or self-compassion or something like that. And then, you know, in the rarer cases that it might work for you, things like reflection on impermanence and reflection on death can be helpful, but it's not for everybody. So it's just that caveat. So, yeah.
Thank you, Ajahn.
Final call for questions.
Is it time for one more online question?
If there's, yeah, Ajahn? There's one more. Yeah, it's fine.
But yeah. First, I'd just like to read out a response from the person who talked about the anxiety of the body, awareness of the body, letting go. Said, thank you. I'm currently dealing with aging and tiredness and isolation, and I'm a sole practitioner, so have no one to discuss Buddhism with.
Yep.
I practice daily and will do as you suggest.
Okay, good. So, nice. Try it out. Try it out. See if it works.
Someone's asked, how do I use chanting as part of my practice at home?
Yeah, so chanting, it's similar to the answer that I gave before. It's something that you just try and you see if it works for you. Chanting can be a way. So there's two sort of main areas of focus you can think about when you're thinking about chanting. So for some people, the act of chanting is brings up a lot of joy, brings up a lot of faith in their mind. Maybe they reflect on the teachings, because most of the chants in Buddhism, for anybody that doesn't know, most of the chants are actually teachings of the Buddha. So they're actually some kind of wisdom teaching in some way. So this actually, for a lot of people, brings up a lot of joy, brings up a lot of faith for them. But another way that it is actually quite beneficial is that it can become a form of meditation in itself. So when you're chanting, you have a passage. You have a passage of text that's limited in some way. So you go over it over and over again. And so this can become like this very long mantra that you might do. So an example here is something like, there's the recollection of the Buddha. So itipiso bhagava arahang samma sambuddho vicacarana sampanno supato loka vidu anuttaro purisa dhammasarati satta deva manusanam buddho bhagavati. So it can be this like long mantra that you do. It can be a way for you to, and actually getting back to the question before about high emotionality, actually chanting is a good way, because you're really using your thoughts in this way, in this long, elongated kind of way, to kind of rein things in. So chanting can be helpful in that way, and it can be this form of, you know, developing mindfulness. One thing we try to do in the monastic form is that we learn a lot of these chants and we memorize them. So again, if you're in the middle of the forest, your mind's running all over the place, it's actually quite good to run through these chants that you've memorized, because it's using the active mind to still the active mind. So yeah, it can be a form. Chanting can be a form of, you know, encouraging kind of faith, encouraging some kind of recollection of the teachings, or it can be used in this meditative way where it becomes like this very, very long mantra.
And actually, the one last thing is that it's that I'll add on to that. It also can be used as this kind of life raft as well. You know, especially if you're doing meditation for a long period of time. So I know for myself, when I first got into Buddhism, I hated chanting. I couldn't stand it. I thought it was annoying. It's like, why are we all getting here and chanting? This is stupid. I don't like this. This is terrible. Why do we have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and come to this? This is done. Like, I don't want to do this. So I really, really didn't like it at the start, but I had to learn all the chants. So I learned them all. And, what I started to find was in time that, you know, it's not always the case that your meditation is always going well. And so this act of chanting, it's something that you can continue to do all the time. It's something that you can sort of hold on to when the meditation isn't going so great. It's like, well, I get up and I do some chanting, and it's the first thing I do. And, you know, maybe I can't really calm my mind that well at the moment, but the chanting, it's something that I can do. The chanting, maybe, say, for example, if you're living in a monastic setting, it's like, well, it's something that gets me out of bed and gets me together with the other people. And in some way, it forms this kind of harmony with the people around you because you're having to chant with them. So it can be the act of chanting also can be this kind of life raft that you end up holding onto when things aren't going so well in other areas of your practice. Something that you can always do, and something, you know, look, there's no shortage of chants. You can continue to learn more and more of them, so you'll never really run out of them. So yeah, hopefully that sort of give some of the upsides of chanting. And, you know, even if you like it, great. If you don't like it, you know, don't write it off totally. It's maybe something that you might like in time. So yeah. Okay, with that, we might call it a night then. Any final announcements, anything that needs to be said? No. Okay, well, next Sunday, there's a talk on Sunday morning, the communal lunch and things like that. That's really the only thing that's happening. There's meditation tomorrow night with Sandeep. So, yeah, I hope to see you all again at some point soon.